Blog Talk Radio.
That's how we roll. Guess what, y'all? Got the blue lights behind me again. You know what that means. It means I'm going to jerk off on camera. No, I'm kidding. That's gross. It means we have another big announcement today. We're going to jump into it in a second. It has to do with Justice Democrats, of course. But we also have, yes, the James Comey story. That's coming up. Of course, that's coming up. Huge news there. We had some clever reporters who decided to go to one of Donald Trump's hotels and do a little testington, and figure out just how many of his own products are made in the USA. And spoiler, not too many, bitch. We have Attorney General Jeff Sessions and his drug obsession and what's been going on with that, how he's planning his insane crackdown on drugs. By the way, as I talk to you now live on air, I am scheduling or organizing the order of the show. This is what you call being late and not being prepared enough. I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter what order we do it in, but... I still like to have a certain little thing going on here. Some sort of logical progression to the stories. Usually start off more important, work our way to the less important. But I think I'm going to stop ordering it now and just jump right into it. What do you guys think about that? Yes, that's what I'm going to do. And we're going to do that right now. Okay, so... Let's start with the announcements. I got the blue lights going, so you know it's special. Let's do it. If I make sure my drink is off camera. Yes, it is. We have another great announcement for you guys regarding Justice Democrats and regarding the future of the Democratic Party. Representative Ro Khanna has officially joined the Justice Democrats. So he is our first sitting congressman to break ranks with the old school corporate Democrats and say, no, I'm officially with the Justice Democrats. I'm with the new wing of the Democratic Party, the strong wing, the principled liberals and progressives, the people who take no corporate money and no PAC money. Now, when we started this, I got to be honest with you guys, we weren't thinking pretty much about any incumbents. I mean, the whole idea was, let's get fresh blood. Let's get people who are not career politicians. Let's get regular people, working people who agree with the platform, agree with ending the corruption, and let's run them because we should have people who represent the people in the House of Representatives and in the Senate. But Representative Ro Khanna really, really, really impressed us. His record is fantastic. So first of all, he's one of six members of Congress that already decided, way before Justice Democrats, already decided I'm not going to take any corporate money. I'm not going to take any PAC money. Think about that. One of six. So he already knew the formula before we came around. He already knew the formula before Bernie Sanders even showed the model being possible. How Bernie Sanders said, look, I'm not going to take any PAC money, and I'm going to... He was able to raise a lot of money, $27 at a time, raising money from individuals, from regular people. That's what Ro Khanna has done. So that was really impressive. It was also really impressive to me that he ran one of the first campaigns that was based on being against the Iraq war. So he stuck his neck out there when other people, when it was still a duh position in Washington that you don't question the orthodoxy, you know, you don't make it so that your opponents can paint you as soft on terrorism. Ro Khanna said, no, I think you guys are wrong. I think the Iraq war was a gigantic mistake, so I'm going to run a campaign against the Iraq war. I was really impressed by that. And I have to say I'm also really impressed by the way in which he bucks trends. So remember when President Trump recently bombed the Syrian government? Well, Ro Khanna was one of very few Democrats who came out there and didn't just object on procedural grounds. He objected on substantive grounds. Even Bernie Sanders, during that whole episode, said, well, yeah, you know, Assad's a terrible guy and maybe he has it coming. But what the president has to come through through Congress before he does something like this. I mean, he is breaching protocol and I am against this. Ro Khanna said, yeah, that's nice. I agree. Of course he's breaching protocol and he needs to come through Congress. But also, if slash when he were to do that, I would say, no, don't bomb Syria for reasons X, Y, and Z. Yes, Assad's a bad guy, but guess what? According to multiple studies, the majority of the rebels are Islamists and jihadists. And what are you going to do? You're going to create another power vacuum, and we're going to break the Middle East further, and we already learned the lessons of history from Libya and Iraq. He's one of the few politicians who I've seen bring up that argument, bring up Iraq and bring up Libya, and say, we already made this mistake. So what are you guys thinking? What are you doing? So to me, I see somebody who is much more objective than other Congress people. He has a track record of fighting for the right things, takes no corporate money, takes no PAC money. And I'm impressed by a lot of the arguments he uses. So we covered the story where he was in a committee hearing, and they were discussing health care, and Congressman Khanna had a list of Trump quotes on universal health care, and he read them. He said, oh, by the way, this is what President Trump said, whatever year it was, and then he goes through it. Because Trump has said, praise the Canadian healthcare system, they have single payer. He's praised the Scottish healthcare system, they have single payer. He just recently praised the Australian healthcare system. The guy's on record at least six times saying, yes, I like single payer, I think it's the best system, you know, we should copy a system like that. So you already have single payer with 60% popularity. Medicare for All, 60% in the U.S. There are even more Republicans that support it than don't support it. So it's really popular. It's the principled liberal and progressive position. And you have a Republican president who has given you so much ammunition to go out there and bludgeon him over the head with it and say, look, are you a liar or are you not? Do you believe in what you said or were you just blowing smoke up everybody's ass? And Ro Khanna is the only congressperson who I've seen go out there, use Donald Trump's own quotes against him and say, let's go. Let's go to work here. Let's attack. So in many ways, he impressed not just me, but the other co-founders of Justice Democrats, Jake Huger, Shoykat Chakrabarty, Zach Exley, and we said we'd love to have this guy, man. And he was all for it, and we're ready to go, man. We're ready to fight. But there's a deeper importance to this that, you know, you might not realize at face value, and you could be forgiven for not realizing it at face value, but this is somebody who's already there, who knows his colleagues. So now to them, to Nancy Pelosi, to the corporate Democrats, there's somebody who's treasonous. There's a zombie in the House. there's an enemy from within. To them, this is like, whoa, 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 what? What did you just do? You just made an alliance with the rabble? The rabble, which, by the way, wants to primary the pants off of every corporate Democrat, and we're doing it. We're doing it. So you think they like this? No. Ro Khanna just effectively ostracized himself from the core of Democratic power in Washington. That takes balls, man. That takes balls. Because everybody, you know, look, we could all talk a big game, but to draw an analogy here, when you're in high school or you're in college and you're there and you look around, you want some friends on your team now, don't you? Ro Khanna said, yeah, I don't really care. I'm not there to make friends. I'm there to actually fight for the people. I'm principled. I believe in free college. I believe in making the minimum wage a living wage and tying it to inflation. I believe in Medicare for all. I believe in ending the wars. This is a guy who's principled. This is a guy who's a strong liberal and progressive. He looks around him and sees that many of his colleagues are just corporate Democrats who are there to collect their donor checks and do the bidding of the donors. And he said repeatedly, look, if there's no reason for you to be afraid. If you have strength in your ideas, your beliefs, you should welcome a primary challenge because that'll just make the party stronger. But no, the corporate Democrats don't want any primary challengers because they want to keep the corporate Democrat model the main model for the Democratic Party. Ro Khanna knows that's a losing strategy, so he doesn't care that he just made enemies. I'm telling you, man, something like this sends shockwaves through Washington because we're on record. We're primarying a lot of the corporate Democrats, and he just looked his own colleagues in the eyes and said, you should be primary. Strength. That is strength. So we're really happy to have Representative Ro Khanna. And the Justice Democrats, we're going to keep doing big things because the movement is really you guys. That's the main point. You guys know what it's about. You go to justicedemocrats.com, you read that platform, you see exactly what we're about. The number one issue is trying to get money out of politics and having representatives who take no corporate money and no PAC money so you know they're representing you. And again, remember, that's just a short-term fix because in the long term, we want to get money out of the system. And if we get enough Justice Democrats in there, we could succeed on that front. So number one issue, not having corrupt politicians, having politicians who take no corporate money, no PAC money, and they represent the people. And then you see all the other issues that we stand for there on the website, on our platform. You can go read about it. And, man, it's happening. It's happening. We have Cori Bush running against Lacey Clay. You know, Lacey Clay, the representative from the predatory payday loan industry, and the representative who's in favor of militarized police, even though he represents Ferguson. Think about that. We have Cori Bush on our side. We have Paula Swearingen primarying corporate Joe Manchin, the worst of the worst. And she's bold, pushing for Medicare for all, pushing for infrastructure jobs and new jobs for the future of West Virginia. She's seen it firsthand. Her grandfather had black lung. She's a fighter, and she's going to get it done. And now we have Representative Ro Khanna, one of the few principled Democrats already in Congress, on our side. This wave is just starting, and it's because of you guys. It's the populist left. It's fighting from the grassroots and working our way up. So let's keep up the pressure. By the way, if you haven't yet, justicedemocrats.com/singlepayer. Go sign that petition. Call your congressperson and tell them to support H.R. 676. Because that's a Medicare for All bill proposed by John Conyers. And we've been able to chip away because the National Nurses United, brand new Congress, and Justice Democrats, and all the grassroots and their hard work, we've been able to chip away from just 72 congresspeople co-sponsoring that bill. Now it's 104, and every day there are more that fall. So keep up the pressure. Let's keep going. We're going to keep working at it. And that, I'm telling you, that Justice Democrat wave is happening. And this is a big piece of the puzzle to fall immediately. The first real principled sitting congressman to say, you know what, I'm with these guys. That's huge news, man. And in Washington, they're beginning to shake in their boots. Okay. Oh, that's a great story. Yummy, yummy in my tummy. Okay. Now, let me move along to President Donald Trump and how big of a liar he is. With his shitty fucking products at his hotels. Some clever reporters decided it would be a good idea to go to one of Trump's hotels and see how many products are American-made. Now, of course, they're doing this because he did the Buy American, Hire American executive order recently, which, by the way, is no such thing. It's just telling people and asking people to set up a review process. So he's asking a federal agency to set up a review process to determine, would it be good to do Buy American, Hire American? So it's just totally misleading. If he wanted to do it on day one, he could have signed an executive order that said, hey, when we have any federal agencies buy goods, they can only be American-made and not American-made and our allies. Right now, that's what it is. So we have Buy American provisions in place, but they slickly added to that, oh, when we say that, we mean us and our allies. So you can buy from China, you can buy from Israel, you can buy from all these different countries, and technically that's American-made, even though it's not. So he could have just signed that executive order on day one and gotten it over with. He didn't do it. Why? Because he's been swayed by the establishment to not do it. But let's go ahead and take a look at what's going on at his own hotels to see just how much he follows his own rule of Buy American. President Donald Trump signed an executive order last month urging government agencies to buy American, but that directive hasn't been followed at his family's newly opened Washington, D.C. hotel. WUSA-TV rented a room at the Trump International Hotel on Pennsylvania Avenue for a nightly rate of $800 so reporters could see how many items had been made in the U.S., and it turns out not too many. They found phones from Malaysia, a TV from South Korea, towels from India, soaps and shampoo from Canada, glasses from Italy, and a bathrobe from China. The furniture and bathroom fixtures were made in the USA, the station reported, and so were the bedside Bible, clock, and trash can. Altogether, 21 of the 31 items in the room whose origins could be identified, it says here were American-made, but actually it's supposed to say were not American-made because I watched the original local news segment and they said 21 out of 31 were not American-made. So that's a typo here. Wow. Now, look, man, I've discussed this before. I'm an actual protectionist. Nobody says that anymore. Like, everybody's like, what? If you say that in Washington, you'll be laughed out of the room. People be like, what? You're a protectionist? And what does that mean when you say you're a protectionist? It means I'm in favor of tariffs on foreign goods that are imported into the U.S., and you put a tariff on the goods to make them a little bit more expensive than American-made goods so that you're incentivizing people to buy American. Because when you incentivize people to buy American, what you're doing is you're incentivizing job creation in the United States of America. So I got nothing against people from India or Bangladesh or China or wherever the hell else goods are imported from. But here's what I'm in favor of. I want people in my country who are my neighbors to have good jobs, make good money, have a good quality of life, and the rules that are in place in our government and our system should be for the benefit of the people in the country. So that's not a radical idea. That was the common sense position for a very long time, and many other countries today do the same thing. We have trade deals where it only benefits our multinational corporations. See, that's the point, is trade deals now are geared towards boosting corporate profits and making multinational corporate CEOs happy. So the trade deals only benefit the mega-rich, and they screw over everybody else. So we're here to say no, and I'm here to say no. I'm not in favor of so-called free trade, because it's really just outsourcing jobs, outsourcing deals. I'm in favor of protectionism. Now, does that mean I want to do no trade at all? Of course not. I'm in favor of trading out of necessity. I'm in favor of trade. Hey, they have something we need. We don't have it. We have something they need. They don't have it. Okay, let's do a deal. Let's do a trade deal. Totally fine with trade out of necessity. when you're trading just for corporate profits and you're shipping millions of jobs out of the U.S., I'm not for it. So I'm an old school protectionist, and Donald Trump loves to play that game and use that rhetoric, but the reality is he's no such thing. He's not at all protectionist. In fact, he has deals with his own companies with 15 different countries. Stop and think about that. So as he's ranting and raving and railing against, other companies, how dare you outsource your jobs? We're going to make you keep it here. First of all, he doesn't. It's all a show. But second of all, he doesn't really believe in that. If he really believed in that, he would have his own goods made here. He doesn't. As you can see, 21 out of 31 products in one hotel room of his, the products are foreign made. So you can't lecture people and rail against something if you are doing the exact opposite, because that shows you are what you do, and your actions do speak louder than your words. So what do? You buy more foreign goods than American-made goods. So you're not a protectionist, you're not a Buy America guy, and you're not going to change the laws in that respect. So he's full of shit, and I told you, he could have done that executive order on day one. Buy American means actually buy American, not us and our allies, but he didn't do it. And he didn't do it because ever since he got in office, he's been listening to the establishment. Nobody should be surprised by that. He fucking has at least, three, four different Goldman Sachs guys in his administration now? And we're, he's totally representing the people. No, he's not. He's representing the elite. He's representing Wall Street. He's representing the corporations. So it was all a ruse, the Buy American, High American thing. He can't even have his own shit made in America. And I'm supposed to trust the guy. I mean, give me a break. What a giant hypocrite. I mean, that's incredible. Well, yeah, Buy America, that's what I'm all about. Anyway, I have a deal with 15 different countries. And where are the Democrats on this? I mean, they're really not pounding away at this when they could. I mean, this is an argument that would win, where you say, you're such a goddamn hypocrite. You have your own stuff made overseas, as you pretend like you're all about Buy American. He's like, Trump is a liar, a mediocre liar, but his most egregious lies he largely gets away with. And, the things he says that are least objectionable somehow are the things that the Democrats go after him for, which just shows that the Democrats have no political sense either. But there you have it. Donald Trump's own hotels, his own companies. Not only are they not buying American, the overwhelming majority of stuff that they're buying for their businesses, not American. Okay. Okay, let me take a break. When we come back, we have new approval numbers for Congress, and we're going to laugh and we're going to cry together, okay? And then we have the International Business Times that show how it's just a part of corporate strategy now to lie. You just lie to people. It really is amazing. You just get it with, let's just lie, and it'll work. And it does often. Oftentimes. So we're going to come back, talk about that, and much more. Stay right there, guys.
We back, y'all.
It's like I'm on an island by myself. God, please protect me if this shit goes
wrong.
Because I can cook a kilo by my jack.
All right, now, let's get to some new approval rating numbers from Congress. Oh, you could probably already guess what they are. Okay, here we go. We have some new approval rating numbers from Congress, so let's go ahead and laugh and cry together. And they're actually not doing too bad right now, guys. This isn't anywhere near a historical low for modern times. 20% approval rating. Wow. Solid. 20%? All right, you can see there. You can see the fluctuation. But it was at 28% fairly recently. So they've dropped off from recently. But you go back not to, 2015... 2014, look at that. In 2013, they bottomed out at 9%. So their approval rating apparently oscillates between 9% and 28%, at least since December of 2013. You have to go all the way back to 2009 for them to get a high of 39%. So I don't know the last time Congress has been over 50%. But that right there, ladies and gentlemen, is a broken system. So one of the main points of me covering this story and giving you these numbers is that if you had a media that was working, wouldn't they be sounding the alarms over this? Wouldn't you hear sirens? The highest we've had since 2009 is 39% approval rating. 28% is still a high compared to all the other numbers, and then you had between 9% and 20% most of the time. I mean, that's in almost a 10-year span. We're talking about what? Maybe an average of, if I had to guess here, 18%? If we saw those numbers about one of our enemy states, we would just laugh endlessly. We would mock them ruthlessly and say that's a banana republic and that's not a real democracy, it's a sham democracy. But when it's us, they don't even discuss it. They don't even discuss this on CNN or MSNBC or Fox News or the nightly news. So what is it? It shows you the whole system is broken. Obviously, the government is broken, but corporate media is totally broken. They hire dingbats. And blockheads like Don Lemon and Wolf Blitzer, never mind the Brian Kilmeades and Steve Ducey's, who are even worse, or the Rachel Maddow's, who are the better ones, who more than half the time are ranting about Russia and leaving all other issues get less coverage than Russia on her show. The whole fucking, this is a huge story, man. Shouldn't we be saying, okay, something's obviously broken here? Could you imagine you buy a product, and that product, you, in your mind, you're like, I'm giving it a 20% grade out of 100. You would immediately have to call them up, say, look, it's broken. Something is broken. I got to return this. It's horrific. It's just not working. What do you want me to tell you? You got to fucking come through and do your job right. The government, it's cool. It's not cool. And how do we get to this point? We got to this point because of money and politics. We got to this point because from the late 1970s and onward, you had the Supreme Court in multiple decisions basically reaffirming the idea that money equals speech. So you basically have unlimited corporate contributions, billionaire contributions, to the point where you have the politicians representing their donors, and their donors are all moneyed interests. So then the concerns and the needs and the wants of the middle class and the poor and the 99% in America, not even on the table. They're not concerned about it. That's why there was that Princeton study which found that we function as an oligarchy. That's the only thing that can explain these numbers. And it's not, I hate it when people try to put, nah, Americans are just stupid, that's why. Okay, what? Even if Americans don't know, and it's actually true, that they're not very good on historical facts, So you could say they're not as educated as they need to be. That doesn't translate into, like, masochism in politics. Like, you know, they still have the common sense. When you look at the opinion polls on what they want in terms of policy, they're actually pretty reasonable. You know, they say we want universal health care, we want to raise the minimum wage, we want to end the wars. Like, those things are all intelligent priorities because they're not masochists. They're not like, hey, let's fuck ourselves and fuck the country over. So when you just turn around and blame them, it's that they're always given the choice of two evils and you got to pick the lesser of two evils, and then you come back and do a poll a month later and ask people, hey, what do you think of Congress that you just elected? They're like, I hate them. So, I mean, that's just gross. 20% approval rating. Nobody talks about it. Nobody's talking about it. Yeah, you know, 80% of you are not happy with what Congress is doing, but that's cool. No, it's not cool. And let me show you the next chart here because this shows you Republican approval versus Democratic approval. So look at the title. I think that title is actually misleading. Republican approval of Congress drops nearly half since February 2017. So they were 50% liked, you know, closer to when the election was, and then they drop off to 28% now. But to me, the bigger story is look at the Democratic number. 10% approval of the Democrats in Congress. But why is that the case? It's the case because they're corrupt. And in the case of the Democratic Party right now, the corporate Democrats are still running the show, and they have no message. What's the message? What's the message? Come on, guys, you tell me. The message is nothing. Stronger together. Break down the barriers. We're for good things and against bad things. America's already great. Equality, yay. Justice, yay. You're just that you're not saying anything. It's just vague, and it's, I don't like Trump. Okay, but what are you for? I'm against Trump. And then? So I'm guarantee you, once you have the Justice Democrat wave takeover and we clean house of the corporate Democrats, the Democrats will be incredibly popular. But as of right now, they're way less popular than the broken, disgusting, corrupted Republican Party. Because guess what? Trump's populist rhetoric actually tapped into a nerve with the Republican base and with the country and made it so that their approval rating is a little higher. So when you can get such a broken, disgusting, corrupt party like the Republicans to appear more populist than you, the Democrats, what does that say about the Democrats? It says they're hopelessly lost. So they need Justice Democrats to take over to show them the way. And by the way, if you had a Justice Democrats wave, the approval rating in Congress. If you had a majority Justice Democrats in Congress, the approval rating would not be 20%. When you have people pushing for, and people say, well, Kyle, how do you know that? Look at the fucking polls. People, a majority of people want Medicare for all. A majority of people want to raise taxes on the rich. A majority of people want free college. A majority of people want to raise the minimum wage. A majority of people want to get out of the wars. Nobody's really actively making that argument and pushing those policies. To any serious degree. Well, if you have a whole bunch of Democrats doing that, guess what? People will like them. When you push for things people want, they tend to like you. When you're corporate sellouts, they don't like you. So that's why we have a disgusting, rotten system, and we have to fix it. Okay. Next. Wah, 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 wah. The International Business Times has an article that demonstrates how lying is just a standard part of corporate strategy nowadays. And they're doing it to screw you over, which of course makes it even worse. So look at this. Are pre-existing conditions still covered? Insurance industry may have lobbied to block protection in AHCA. That's TrumpCare 3.0. An International Business Times review of federal records shows that America's health insurance plans, or AHIP, listed the pre-existing condition issue on disclosure forms documenting nearly $81 million worth of lobbying since the passage of the ACA. $81 million they spent on lobbying on that issue, pre-existing condition. For their part, insurers have publicly asserted that they do not want to discriminate against people with pre-existing medical conditions. AHIP believes that every American deserves coverage and care that is affordable and accessible, including those with pre-existing conditions, the group said in a statement after the passage of the House bill. In the lead-up to the House vote, though, AHIP had been more publicly signaling its discomfort with how the pre-existing condition protections were working out in the AHCA. Quote, "No individual should be denied or priced out of coverage because of their health status," AHIP President Marilyn Taverner told the House panel in February. "However, with this as a principle, modifications to existing insurance reforms are needed." So do you understand the double speak that's going on here and the outright lying that's going on here? You know, this is... it feels relatively new in politics. Like, it used to be the case that when you did something fucked up, you would rationalize it and you would justify it and you would come up with some sort of smooth bullshit explanation as to why that's the case. Today, we just have lies. Like, just in-your-face lies. So AHIP, which is, you know, the private insurance companies, they come out there and they go, "We're in favor of protecting people with pre-existing conditions. We're in favor of the Obamacare protection that says you have to cover people with pre-existing conditions, no questions asked, because what kind of a system would it be if you had the people who need the care the most are not allowed to get it because they might hurt corporate profits on the bottom line." So they go out there and they say that. So, you know, a lot of people, they get lulled into a false sense of security when they hear that. They go, okay, thank God, the insurance companies are doing the right thing. Man, isn't that great that they're acting morally out of their own volition and it, you know, it doesn't occur to them to be horrific like they were previously? Well, isn't that wonderful? But they say that, but then they turn around and they spend $81 million to lobby against pre-existing conditions protections. And again, and then when that becomes apparent, they got to do the doublespeak. So they say stuff like, yeah, no, we believe every American deserves coverage and care that's affordable and accessible, including those with pre-existing conditions. And then they go, but the way it was implemented, though, you know, that could use some modifications is what it could use. So what are those modifications? Well, then you go to TrumpCare 3.0 and you look at what they're doing, and that gives you the answer. So one of the things they did is they're allowing states to opt out of protecting people for pre-existing conditions. So right off the bat there, boom, 50% of the country not going to protect for pre-existing conditions because all the red states are going to have the Republican governors who will do the bidding of the insurance companies. And they go, yeah, we're on the side of the insurance companies and we don't want to give people protections for pre-existing conditions because we want them to make more profits and we want to get campaign contributions from them. So right off the bat, boom, half of the protections for half the people with pre-existing conditions gone. The other dirty trick of it is, even in the places where you continue to have the protections for pre-existing conditions, now they're allowed to legally price gouge the shit out of you if you have a pre-existing condition to make it so that you can't really afford your coverage. So you see that dirty trick? Hey, yeah, sure. Oh, no, look, no, look. We're going to offer you coverage. Come on. We're not monsters here. We're going to protect you even though you have a pre-existing condition. But we're going to jack up your price like 3 or 4 times. Well, a lot of people can't afford that now, can they? Insurance system, health insurance system, and our health care system is a sick, disgusting joke. And every single problem with it comes down to the private, for-profit, rapacious, price-gouging health insurance companies, because they're an unnecessary middleman. The whole idea of single payer is you have a single insurer, the government, and there's no profit margin, so they take tax dollars and they put it towards healthcare. With the insurance companies, they're a for-profit middleman, and how do they make money? They make more money by denying care. So you give them your money, and the idea is, hey, I'm going to pay you a little bit of money every month so that when a problem happens and I need healthcare, you're going to pay for it and I don't have to pay anything. But they trick you in a million different ways. So you're paying into it, you're paying into it, you're paying into it, and then boom, something happens to you and you need coverage, and they go, yeah, submit a claim. Submit a claim? I've been paying you all month and something happens to me and I go, I'm going to submit fucking paperwork? The fuck is this? I'm laying in a hospital bed. My arm is in 3 pieces. What are you talking about? And then they go, yeah, that's cool. So we're going to maybe not cover it. But if we do cover it, by the way, you have to pay the first like $5,000. But that just been paying you every single fucking month. What are you talking about? This is crazy. Now, in the U.S., a lot of people hear that. They go, yeah, I don't know what you're talking about, Kyle. Deductibles, this is everyday. No, it's not. Other modern countries don't have this. Even fucking Trump said this on a late night show one time. I think he was talking to David Letterman. He goes, yeah, my buddy went to Scotland. He was playing golf or something. He broke a limb. He went to the hospital there. He walked in. They gave him care. And then they said, all right, you're all set. He goes, where do I pay the bill? They go, there is no bill. Now, again, if you're an American, that might be a shock. What are you talking about? So you had this huge problem happen. You go in there, and they just take care of it, and they say, go on your way now. You're welcome. Because when you have a single-payer system, the government, your tax dollars goes to that. Now your tax dollars and my tax dollars go to fucking Raytheon and Boeing and the military-industrial complex and corporate subsidies, corporate welfare for ExxonMobil that they don't fucking need. They're one of the most profitable corporations in the world, but they get it for research and development. It goes towards all this bullshit and militarism, and those are the people who are getting the free ride. Shouldn't you be getting – and it's not even really a free ride because you're paying the taxes – so shouldn't you get it back in the form of something that's beneficial for everybody, healthcare? But no, private, rapacious, for-profit health insurance companies are now lying where they go, no, we're in favor of protecting people with pre-existing conditions. Anyway, no, we're not. Of course they're not, because all they care about is their bottom line. That's what a corporation is. That's how it's structured. So that's why you have to have rules and regulations to protect people. And this is one of those instances where you need a protection for pre-existing conditions. But look, I go further, man. You got to do a single-payer Medicare for all system. And I'm not going to ban private health insurance companies. You want to get supplemental private health insurance and you pay for it, why not? But you have to have a Medicare for all system set up. You have to. Because if you don't, these guys rule the day. And so our prices are higher, we cover fewer people, and we get worse outcomes. It's a lose-lose-lose across the board. But you still have the shameless liars who go, we're the best system in the world, even though we're objectively, empirically not. And, oh, yeah, we do it. Everybody comes here for care. Like, yeah, Saudi fucking princes. If you're a billionaire, maybe you come here. If you're anybody else, you get shittier care than every other modern nation. So this is a sick joke. They're just lying to you. And you have the Democrats and the Republicans still playing ball with these companies. This is why you need Justice Democrats. Because we'll look those fucking health insurance companies in the eyes and say, we're going to abolish your punk ass. Or at the very least, we're going to take away your stranglehold on the market. We're going to create a Medicare for all system, and you're going to be relegated to, you know, supplemental side insurance if some rich people want to get some shit. But everybody else, Medicare for all. So, God, they make me so sick because they're screwing you over so bad, and they don't give a shit. They're just people trying to make a buck. And they don't care that every other modern nation has evolved on this issue. They're holding us back in so many ways, and so many people are getting sick and bankrupt and dying as a result. Okay. Next. Do-do-do. Here's a stark reminder of what Republican politicians in Washington think of the American public. Senator Hatch, the public wants every dime they can be given. Okay, let me just reflect on the headline alone here from CNN. You do know that Orrin Hatch, he spent $20,000 worth of campaign contributions at a steakhouse on one dinner, and I believe the steakhouse is literally called The Monocle. So look at this guy painting the American people as greedy, out of touch, you know, parasites and moochers. Look in the mirror, dipshit. Do I need to go to Open Secrets and look at how much money Orrin Hatch has raised in his career from special interests, from big money donors, and then he turned around and did their bidding? But taking $20,000 in campaign contributions, spending it on one dinner at the Monocle, and he says, the public wants every dime they can be given. My God. And by the way, credit to Li Fang of The Intercept there, because he's the one who uncovered that fact, or at least brought it to my attention, about Orrin Hatch and his luxurious dinners. But look at how they view you, man. That's how they view you. They view you as, like, you're the public, you're parasites, you're moochers. But hold on, you're paying taxes. You're paying taxes. So what Orrin Hatch wants is, okay, you pay me your taxes, and then you shut the fuck up and don't ask for anything. So that would make Orrin Hatch like the mafia. That's what the mob does. Pay me for your protection, and, you know, maybe I won't send Paulie Walnuts over there to do a number on your kneecaps. No, but the American people, they want to, when they pay their taxes, they want something in return. That's not them being moochers and parasites. That's them being intelligent. hey, I just gave you 20% of my paycheck. Maybe you give me health care. Maybe you give my kid education. Maybe you give me nice infrastructure. That's what a reasonable person wants. That's how a functioning system would work. But no, the public is the enemy. This is a far-right Republican's mindset, especially one who's been in Washington too long. The public is the enemy. All right, let me give you more. Utah Republican Senator Orrin Hatch warned Tuesday that efforts to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act in the Senate might be complicated because once the public is in on the dole, this is a quote, is in on the dole, they'll take every dime they can. The comment by one of the key Senate architects of the ongoing rewrite of the massive health care law suggests Republicans are skeptical Americans will be unwilling to give up benefits provided for under the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. Some components of Obama's signature health care law, such as the expansion of Medicaid in many states, would be cut back in the House's version of the bill that was approved last week. As he left a meeting in the Capitol of the Senate Health Care Working Group, which is trying to craft compromise legislation that can pass the Senate without Democrats, Hatch was asked by a reporter, how does the public's perception of what the House did affect what you are doing? Quote, the public wants every dime they can be given, he said. Let's face it, once you get them on the dole, they'll take every dime they can. We've got to find some way of getting things under control or this country and your future is going to be gone. Orrin Hatch is an idiot and he's deeply corrupt because look at the framing there. When it's health care for you and your kids, it's, you're on the dole, parasite, puh, disgusting, moocher. Has he ever framed it like that for the $4 billion subsidy that the government gives ExxonMobil every single year? He's never framed it like that, has he? Has he framed it like that when it comes to the bailout of Wall Street? We gave them trillions and trillions of dollars to bail them out when they bankrupted their own companies and they made the decisions that crashed the economy. They did that. And then they got rewarded with bonuses from taxpayer money that we paid them. So does he frame a Wall Street bailout as, moochers, parasites, they're on the dole and you can't get them off? He doesn't frame Wall Street bailouts like that. He doesn't frame subsidies for ExxonMobil. He doesn't frame the $80 billion a year the big banks get every year as a subsidy as that. He doesn't frame the over 50% of our discretionary budget that goes to the military. He doesn't frame that like that. He doesn't frame the money for Raytheon and Boeing and the no-bid contracts like that. So if it's rich white dudes in suits, if it's multinational corporate CEOs, no, they deserve socialism. They deserve your tax money. They're just hardworking, upstanding Americans. But if you're a regular person who pays your taxes and you want health care for the money you're paying, on the dole, moocher, parasite. He thinks you're the enemy. He's convinced you're the enemy. This is who you elected, somebody who despises you, who wants to rob you blind with your taxes and then turn around and spend it on people who are already rich and don't need it and subsidize all the wrong industries that create war and crash the economy. So Orrin Hatch is the problem. He's the problem. It's not regular people. It's not working people. It's not poor people. It's you, Orrin. It's you and your elitist establishment out-of-touch buddies who look at the public with scorn, as if it's so unreasonable to want to set up a society where the basics are taken care of. You know, there's one little part where he's right, where he's like, look, once you give them these programs, they don't want to get rid of them. Yeah, because they're fucking wildly popular and they work. Medicare has a 70% approval rating. That's why about 60% of Americans want Medicare for all. And if it was argued for properly, 77% of Americans will want Medicare for all. So it's not like, oh, my God, they're so unreasonable that they see this program works and they're getting something for their money. How dare they? No, that's intelligent. You're the one who's deeply corrupt, and you're the one whose priorities are backwards, which is why you find that outrageous. Well, guess what? All of us find you outrageous. Okay. I think we are going to go to you know what, let me take a break and then we'll come back and we'll do the Jeff Sessions story. Then we have The Rock. Then we have Jimmy Carter. Oh, goodness gracious. So we still got a power-packed show for you the rest of the show. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. Some big news here regarding Attorney General Jeff Sessions and his anti-drug obsession. This is from Vice News. Attorney General Jeff Sessions has made no secret of his desire to revitalize the U.S. war on drugs, and new reports indicate that he intends to begin by reinstituting harsher sentences for low-level drug offenders, or it says low-level offenders. Sessions is considering reversing Obama-era guidelines that directed federal prosecutors to avoid charging low-level drug offenders with crimes that carry harsh mandatory minimum sentences, U.S. officials told the Washington Post. These sentencing laws have led the United States to have the highest rate of incarceration in the world, and bringing them back would mark Sessions' first concrete move in his promised crackdown on drugs. In 2013, then-Attorney General Eric Holder Jr. sent a memo to federal prosecutors instructing them not to charge defendants with sentences that would trigger mandatory minimum sentences unless they were violent, were leaders in drug organizations, or met similar qualifications. That may soon change. Sessions is reportedly considering instructing prosecutors to bring the harshest possible charges against all levels of drug offenders. Sessions is also reportedly considering reviving the widespread use of charging offenders with enhancements, which can further lengthen sentences for certain defendants who have already been convicted of felony drug crimes. Holder's memo also largely ended that practice. Sessions has long supported harsher sentencing. While still a senator, Sessions helped block a bill that would have reformed some mandatory minimum sentencing laws. So the U.S. Is number one in prison population and how many people we jail. So, you know, when, you know, people on the right always say, we're number one, yeah. Well, yeah, there are a few things we're number one in: obesity, military spending, percentage of the population that we jail. So that is not necessarily something that's good to be number one in now, is it? Are we saying that we're particularly more violent as a country than any other country? Or is it perhaps that our laws are preposterous? It's that. And for the longest time, we've been locking people up for silly little minor drug offenses. And, you know, this was the problem with Obama and Holder, that even though they, in some ways, they try to push in the right direction, it was just ever so slightly, and they didn't fundamentally change the structure of the system and change the most important laws. So marijuana is still a Schedule I drug. They could have changed that. They didn't. Obama did, to his credit, free many nonviolent drug offenders, pardoned them, commuted their sentences. But now Jeff Sessions is getting in there, and he's basically saying, yeah, you know how you didn't put an onus on nonviolent low-level drug offenders? Now we are. We're going to do that again. And think about how deeply unpopular this is with the American people. Because as of today, 60% of the American people want to legalize marijuana for recreational purposes, not just medical purposes. Medical is such a given, we don't even need to discuss it. But for recreational purposes, 60% of the country wants to legalize it. Well, now we have an attorney general who's saying, not only am I not going to do that, I'm going to double down on harsh mandatory minimum sentences for low-level nonviolent drug offenders. To draw a parallel here, that's like having alcohol prohibition and then having somebody come in who wants to double down on the punishments for low-level nonviolent alcohol crimes. Like, what, we caught you drinking a Corona. We caught you drinking a shot of Jack Daniels. What am I going to do? I got to lock you up and I got to give you a mandatory minimum of 3 years. What am I going to do? I caught you drinking it. I mean, that's a crime. What are you doing? For some reason, when it comes to marijuana, which is actually less dangerous, less bad for you than alcohol, the establishment is like, oh, we gotta go crack down, go. Well, look, guys, it has a lot more to do with, number one, the DEA. The DEA would do anything, and they are doing anything and everything to make sure drugs are illegal because their jobs rely on the drugs being illegal. So there's a debate in the country as to, hey, should we kind of like chop the FDA down like 80%? So they're doing everything they can, using all their power to make sure that doesn't happen. Then you have the alcohol industry, which views marijuana as their competition, views other drugs as their competition, so they're lobbying against the legalization. And we know they're doing it because whenever these things come up in various states to legalize it at the state level, you have alcohol companies rush in and fund the no campaign. You have Big Pharma, they do the same thing. You'd think that maybe they want to, hey, let's get in on this and maybe we can make money for medical marijuana or whatever. No, they want to shut it down. They view medical marijuana or just recreational marijuana, other drugs, as their competition. So Big Pharma, alcohol companies, tobacco companies, the DEA, these are all the groups, moneyed interests, that are against marijuana being legalized. So they fund the efforts to put it down. And sometimes it works, guys. Even though 60% of Americans say legalize it for recreational purposes. But Jeff Sessions is totally disconnected from the American people. Remember, this is a guy who said, quite literally, good people don't smoke marijuana. You have, like, an old-school, primitive, draconian, idiotic, moronic person who's now the top lawyer in the country. Many things are going to go wrong. They're already starting to go wrong. And what they want to do is ruin people's lives over low-level, nonviolent drug offenses, which in my mind are just not even a crime. That's not a crime. Low-level, it's like saying, I caught you drinking a Monster Energy. I caught you taking a Xanax. I caught you, whatever, drinking coffee. That's a drug. Caffeine's a drug. Well, you did marijuana. What am I going to do? I'm going to have to lock you up. How many lives have we ruined because of the drug war? And now the Attorney General wants to ruin a hell of a lot more. Okay. All right. Now I know all you were waiting for this segment, so here we go. Dwayne The Rock Johnson might actually run for president. He did an interview with GQ where they discussed exactly that. Here's a good summary of it. Is Dwayne Johnson ready to rock the White House? The Baywatch actor has mulled over a run for office for the last couple of years, and given that the Oval is now occupied by a man with, how do we put this nicely, an unconventional political resume, it doesn't seem as far-fetched. Speaking with GQ in a wide-ranging profile about his political ambitions and all-around nice guy charm, Johnson calls a run for presidency a real possibility. A year ago, it started coming up more and more, he said. There was a real sense of earnestness which made me go home and think, let me really rethink my answer and make sure I am giving an answer that is truthful and also respectful. As a registered independent, Johnson has expressed support for both Republican and Democratic candidates in the past, but refused to publicly endorse either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton in the 2016 election. According to Johnson, both candidates tried to court him for support, but instead he stayed silent to let Americans make up their own minds, and so they did. Quote, I feel like I'm in a position now where my word carries a lot of weight and influence, which of course is why they want the endorsement, Johnson said of keeping his political opinions to himself. But I also have a tremendous amount of respect for the process and felt like if I did share my political views publicly, a few things would happen. I felt like it would either A, make people unhappy with the thought of whatever my political view was, and also it might sway an opinion, which I didn't want to do. What? Besides his unwavering support for the troops, it's unclear exactly what kind of President Johnson would be in terms of political priorities, but he did express disdain for Trump's travel ban without hesitation in the interview. I completely disagree with it, the actor said. I believe in our national security to the core, but I don't believe in a ban that bans immigrants. I believe in inclusion. Our country was built on that, and it continues to be made strong by that, and the decision felt like a snap judgment. Another way he would differentiate himself from Trump is by welcoming the opposition instead of stifling it. When asked about how the president is doing, Johnson didn't outright criticize Trump, but he did place an emphasis on bringing his detractors into the fold if he should wind up in the highest political office. Personally, I feel that if I were president, poise would be important. Leadership would be important. Taking responsibility for everybody. If I didn't agree with someone on something, I wouldn't shut them out. I would actually include them, he explained. The first thing we do is we come and sit down and we talk about it. Okay, understand something, man. I like The Rock. I do. When I was younger, during the Attitude Era, I was a huge WWE fan. Me and my buddy, well, at the time it was WWF, me and my buddy would do trampoline wrestling, and it was the best fucking time ever. We'd have our little fucking goofy wrestling dolls. We'd be fucking DDTing them, powerbombing them and shit. And it's hilarious. Whenever we would do you throw somebody into the ropes in professional wrestling and they run back at you. So it's already goofy enough in the professional wrestling sense. But on the trampoline, there were no ropes. And we would, throw the other person. They'd run and come back, and then we'd close on them. We used to record it and shit. So I love wrestling. The Rock is a tremendous character in the wrestling ring. He does really ooze charisma. And when you read the original GQ interview on this, you get a perfect sense of how he is. Like, he's a really rare dude in that. And the person who writes that piece keeps saying this. Like, I felt like he was my best friend, like, 3 minutes after meeting him. He was genuinely curious about my life and everything about, you know, what I had gone through and what my opinions are. And he wanted to talk and he wanted to get to know me and he wanted to make me feel comfortable. And I believe all of that. And, you know, he's literally, I think, the highest paid actor now in the world. Like, he is just, he made, what did they say, like $60 million or some ridiculous number last year. So the guy oozes charisma. I like him. You know, he's got that charm, that X factor where you just look at it, like, oh, I like that guy. Ah, you know, he's one of those guys. But what are we talking about here? I mean, come on, man. President, I just read you the whole piece. You got one policy position. I'm against banning all Muslims. File that under the duh category. Like, I don't want to ban all immigrants or ban all Muslims. Like, that's bad. Thank you, The Rock. We really appreciate that. Of course, that's so easy. That's so fucking easy. And then again, so here's why I despise this, even though I like The Rock. He's just a fucking Hollywood movie star now who's charming. People know virtually nothing about what he really believes in terms of policy, and they're like, save us, The Rock! I mean, that's a really rotting, broken society. Like, next it's, let's get Liam Neeson, because he's, you know, he's a badass in those Taken movies, so obviously make a good president. Chuck Norris, Steven Seagal. Like, what do you mean? Look at the character. He's always righteous, and he's fighting for justice. He's out for justice, man. You got Steven Seagal. Let's go. Steven Seagal 2020. That's not the right fucking skill set. It's not. We like you when you're charming. Be the leader of the free world and determine what's supposed to happen with fucking North Korea and the marginal tax rate. And then the part where I really got pissed was all of his quotes. Because all of his quotes are just bullshit. And again, he's one of those guys, like, if you look at Tom Perez's vagueness and how general he speaks, I'm for good things, I'm against bad things, I just want everybody to know that. Like, okay, in his case, it's somewhat nefarious because he's deflecting from, you know, doing the bidding of his corporate donors and he doesn't want to say I'm for Medicare for all because he's not. In the case of The Rock, I just don't think he knows about actual policies and what's the right thing to do. So this is him giving honest answers, but his honest answers are just airhead answers. Look at that. Personally, I would feel that if I were president, poise would be important. The fuck does that mean? Leadership would be important. Taking responsibility for everybody would be important. And you know what? I wouldn't shut out the people who disagree with me. I'd include them. So again, you have to file that under the same category. That kind of a comment, you file that under the same category. I have four good things and against bad things and stronger together, break down the barriers, equality is nice, fairness is good, we're in favor of fairness, our opponents are against fairness. You're not saying anything. You're moving your mouth and it's just a bullshit. You want to help people? You really want to do this? Medicare for all, single payer. Hey, we look into the studies. Every other modern nation has one version or another. We don't. We have 45,000 people die every year because they don't get basic care. We have over 10 million uninsured people. We got medical bills, one of the top causes of bankruptcy. Let's get serious. You know, do you know if you work a full-time job, you don't make enough money to survive? Maybe we should make the minimum wage a living wage. Hey, did you know we're doing 7 different interventions right now? Maybe we shouldn't, since none of those 7 countries were about to wage an offensive attack against us, and we needlessly are bombing the fuck out of them. That's substance! Hey, did you know we incarcerate more people than anywhere else in the world, and we have a stupid drug war where we lock people up for tweaking their consciousness with a substance? No. I feel poise is important. Poise is good leadership. I'm in favor of leadership and stuff, and, you know, down with people I disagree with. Well, for me, we're a joke. Like, it's sad. We've become a joke. And you know what? Part of me can't blame people because the establishment has failed them for so long that they're looking for anything anti-establishment. And they look at a guy like The Rock, and some people might think, this is what happened with Trump, a goofy fucking reality star, but he used some anti-establishment rhetoric. So people went, everything is fucking me so bad. Like, the whole system is half the country makes $30,000 a year or less. The system, over 70% of the American people live paycheck to paycheck. The system has screwed you so goddamn long that you said, I'm going to roll the dice on this buffoon. He's got a meerkat on his head. He dyes his fucking face orange. Here, roll the dice. Fuck it. Maybe he does something good. So, in a way, I don't blame people, but to turn anti-establishment, don't turn goofy anti-establishment with entertainers who don't know their ass from their elbow and don't know policy. And again, I like The Rock. It's not personal. But turn towards anti-establishment in a way that's productive. Turn towards the people who are giving you real specific policies that will fix your life. But that's the point, is I don't think you have the same thing. Like, on the right, they pretend to hate Hollywood and stars. They fucking love it. They're all star fuckers. The second, Clint Eastwood spoke to a chair. Wasn't it awesome? I hate celebrities and politics unless they agree with me. So, but I don't think that stuff works on the left as much. I don't. I think that, you know, we fell for the rhetoric of Barack Obama with the fake populism, even though he was a standard neoliberal. But yes, this is why Bernie Sanders went from 0% in the polls to 47% and won 22 states. He's 1,000 years old. He's not sexy at all. He speaks with a heavy accent. But, substance. People ran to the substance. So give people a substance, they'll come to it. Don't give people the fucking, again, The Rock, nothing against you, man, but seriously, come on. This isn't you. This isn't you. You're a really charming Hollywood-type guy, but when you give answers, poison leadership is great. Yeah, vote for me. It's just goofy and it's wrong, and you're not going to fix the country that way. Okay, next. All right, now we go to Jimmy Carter. Story with Jimmy Carter. Nice. Jimmy Carter did an event with Bernie Sanders a few days ago at the Carter Center, and he gave a brilliant answer when asked about the rise of Trump and authoritarianism.
How do you both explain the rise of authoritarianism? Where's this coming from?
Well, I think the root of it is something that I haven't heard discussed much. I told a group today that in 1999, at the end of the last millennium, in the beginning of 2000, I was asked to make speeches in Oslo, Norway, and also in Taiwan. And my subject was, what is the greatest challenge to be faced by the next century? And I said the disparity between rich people and poor people. And I think that that is the case not only between people who live in a country, but also between nations. And I believe that the root of a downturn in human rights preceded 2016. It began earlier than that. And I think the reason was the disparity in income, which has been translated into the average person, you know, good, decent, hardworking, middle-class people, feeling that they are getting cheated by the government and by society. And they don't get the same element of health care. They don't get the same quality education. They don't get the same political rights, particularly after the stupid decision of the Supreme Court on Citizens United, where they said that there's an unlimited amount of money going into campaigns. But now they feel that even in politics, their choice of a candidate to be president or governor or congressman or whatever is not the same as a rich person's. And also, once that candidate gets in office, if it's successful, quite often, the average person feels that they are repaying their contributions with legal bribery, and it's legal. And the justice system has also gone down. Long before we had this last election, when I left the White House, for instance, 1 out of 1,000 people were in prison. Now, 7 people out of 1,000 are in prison. 7 times as many people who are Americans are now in prison as they were just when I left the White House. So the feeling of an average person that I'll be treated fairly by the justice system is missing. So, you know, basic human rights, income, status in society, health care, education, participation in politics, justice, the things in which we used to have complete faith now have been distorted by the rich people getting richer and the poor people getting poorer. And when the rich people get a candidate in office, they can be sure that the tax laws and everything else are going to keep them getting richer and richer, but the average person suffers. So I think that dissatisfaction with the existing system of politics resulted in the outcome of the election in 2016 in the United States. People were willing just to take a chance and to abandon democracy and what we know about is basic principles and try something new, no matter what it was.
That answer was incredibly thoughtful. It was brilliant, and it's absolutely spot on. You could tell he's thought about this quite a bit. And the argument he's making, to sum it up, you know, in a concise way, is the establishment failed regular people and working people for so long, and it failed them so badly, that people were willing to roll the dice on anything that sounded remotely anti-establishment. And that explains the rise of Donald Trump. I mean, you have this really comical kind of character, this bombastic billionaire who kind of says anything, just talks from the cuff. So, but there was a sense of authenticity about him that, you know, you certainly didn't get from a robot like Hillary Clinton. And then you just sprinkle in a little bit of the populist anti-establishment rhetoric. Remember, on the campaign trail, Trump would rail against Wall Street. He rail against Ted Cruz taking Goldman Sachs money and Hillary Clinton in her Wall Street speeches, and said, I'm going to keep your job here. I'm not going to ship out your job. We're going to stop the wars. We're going to bring the troops home, and we're going to rebuild here. And look, he was a liar. He lied about all that. Shameless in that regard. But you know what? The rhetoric swayed people enough. And the Democrats lost the Rust Belt, which was the Democratic firewall. Hillary didn't even step foot to fucking campaign in some of those states. And now we see the results. And the bottom line is you couldn't have the rise of a Donald Trump if the establishment hadn't failed people so thoroughly. And from the late 1970s and onward, with the introduction of money in politics and the idea, totally made up, that money equals free speech and you have legalized bribery now, ever since then, the U.S. has slowly but surely began to function as an oligarchy, where the politicians represent the rich and the corporations and not the middle class and not the poor, not regular people. There's no, according to the Princeton study, there's no correlation between what regular people want and the policies we end up getting. But there is a correlation between what the rich want and the corporations want and the policies we end up getting. So in that system, and in a system where you have Congress, which is a 20% approval rating, that's what it is right now, like, what do you expect to happen when the so-called center, the establishment, fails? People will either go far right or far left. People will either go populist right or populist left. They went with what they thought was populist right with Trump. Obviously, it wasn't, and now it's now just standard establishment bullshit. He's totally sold out, appointing Goldman Sachs everywhere, listening to the neocons in the deep state. So, you know, you didn't actually get populist right, but now the solution is just waiting for us, man, populist left. It's the person sitting just to the right of Jimmy Carter in that segment, Bernie Sanders. And look, Bernie Sanders, he almost did it then. He almost did it in the last election. Remember, entire corporate media against him. They'd show Trump's empty podium before they show a Bernie Sanders speech. Corporate media 100% against him. DNC tipping the scales against him from behind the scenes. Guy with virtually no name recognition going up against the biggest political juggernaut in American history. Went from 0% to 47% is what he got of the vote at the when all was said and done. And he won 22 states. The political revolution almost came to fruition. So populist left will win, and that's our answer. That's how we save this situation, because it's true that as a result of the establishment failing people for so long, people said anything but that. And when you have half the country making $30,000 a year or less, when you have over 70% of the American people living paycheck to paycheck, when you have people dying because they don't have access to basic health care, you have premiums that are higher than ever, you have the worst quality of care ever, you have rampant militarism where we're blowing our resources overseas, when Flint doesn't even have clean water, when you have all those problems, people are going to say anything but the status quo. So now it's time to give them not the status quo, but from the left. and not the pseudo faux populism of Trump and the right. Okay. All right, let's do two more real quick, then we'll call it a day. Recently, somebody was arrested for laughing at Jeff Sessions during a hearing. That's pretty scary, as that shouldn't be the case. Well, you're not allowed to laugh. Those was a free country. Well, now, apparently, arresting people for things that make no sense is a disturbing trend. Reporter arrested for asking Tom Price if domestic violence is a pre-existing condition under Trump care. A $5,000 bond and potential six-month jail term await. Wow, listen to this. A reporter has been arrested for pressing Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price to say whether or not the Trump health care bill would make it harder for domestic violence survivors to obtain insurance. West Virginia police arrested Dan Heyman at the state capitol Tuesday as he walked with Price and White House advisor Kellyanne Conway, holding a recorder out and asking Price repeatedly about claims that insurers could refuse to serve survivors of familial abuse. That claim is based on inference from the bill's provision allowing states to abandon consumer protections from Obamacare with federal permission. So, the charge, by the way, is willful disruption of a governmental process. Boy, does that sound like a charge that shouldn't fucking exist. Willful disruption of a governmental process. So, like, protesting? That's like banning protesting. And the police report says the reporter, quote, was aggressively breaching the Secret Service agents and causing a disturbance by yelling questions at Ms. Conway and Secretary Price. No, you're not allowed to cause a disturbance in what's supposed to be the land of the free. You have to, you know, be a good little bitch. Sit there, don't speak unless spoken to, and only ask polite questions of the elected officials who are trying to jam through a bill that does treat rape as a pre-existing condition. Not kidding about that. Not kidding. So, perfectly fair question, perfectly legitimate question. They're allowing pre-existing conditions protection to be voluntary now on a state-by-state basis, and even where it's not voluntary, they're going to jack up the cost of it. And they're treating all these things as pre-existing conditions, which shouldn't be treated. Nothing should be pre-existing condition, but they're treating even rape and domestic abuse, yes, as pre-existing conditions. And now they're mad that somebody's actually trying to hold, you know, powerful people accountable. It's almost as if the system is geared to protect those who are powerful and screw over everybody else and not allow you to question them strongly. By the way, all the fucking smug, you know, what was it, the celebration of the First Amendment, all the Democrats who now suddenly are like, oh, yeah, no, we love the First Amendment because Trump seemingly is against it. Trump is against it, by the way. But where are you on WikiLeaks? Where are you on Edward Snowden? No, that doesn't count. It doesn't count because of stuff and things. WikiLeaks releases information on the powerful, and we like some powerful Democrats, so now we're against a free press. So I don't know where you are on that. I don't hear much talking about this, but hopefully this story blows up. Hopefully it gets more attention. Because now we're just having people being arrested for laughing at people who are in power and asking tough questions. You asked it with a slightly loud voice and kind of nudged through to try to talk to them. Oh, we must arrest you. Sickening. Final story of the day, y'all. I have a video for you for this one. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos was booed at Bethune-Cookman University during her commencement speech. Let's check it out.
Dr. Jackson, Board of Trustees, thank you so very, very much for this great honor and privilege. I am honored to become a Wildcat. It's a real honor and privilege to be with you as we celebrate the Bethune-Cookman University class of 2017.
If this behavior continues, your degrees will be mailed to you.
DeVos, for those of you who don't know, she's a Christian fundamentalist billionaire, school privatizer crusader. And she quite literally bought her position. She gave colossal amounts of money to all the Republicans who were then in charge of, voting her up or down to be education secretary. And we've gone over the list before on the show, but it is endless. So much money she's given to all the different Republicans. And isn't that crazy? Like, that should be illegal. She gave you all that money, and you're going to be able to vote for her? Like, that, there has to be a different process where you should recuse them. They could be recused, or not even that. It just shouldn't be allowed to give those politicians that money. We should have public financing of elections. We shouldn't have billionaires propping up all these people. Then they get what they want. So here you have somebody who's totally unqualified, Christian fundamentalist, billionaire school privatizer, and now she's Secretary of Education, and she's going to go through like a wrecking ball and, ruin the institutions even more so than they're ruined now. So if there was ever a figure to do civil disobedience against, it's her. Now, understand something. If they were to try to organize and get her banned from speaking, then I would be against the students, and I'd say no. I think that's basic matter of free speech. You don't like the speaker, so what? There's no speaker who everybody's going to agree on. Granted, I happen to deeply, deeply agree with you that this one is like one of the worst. But no, she should be allowed to speak. She should be allowed to give that speech. Having said that, I see nothing wrong with the protests. I see nothing wrong with even the boisterous protests. They turned their backs on her and they started booing her. Yeah, go right ahead. I would have joined you. Christian fundamentalist, school privatizing crusader who bought her fucking position. It is egregious she's in that position. It is stunning she's in that position. She's by no means qualified. And it's just nepotism and corruption. Yes, yes, yes. Don't tell me she can buy her position in a brazenly corrupt move, and she's a Christian fundamentalist, and then you have to sit there and be nice when she wants to talk. Fuck you. Freedom of speech works both ways. Yes, I'm for her right to give that speech. Totally fine, and I would be against the students if they tried to ban her. This isn't them trying to ban her. This is them booing her and the freedom of speech going both ways. And I love how the guy who apparently is in charge, president or whatever, the university steps up there and he's like, yeah, okay, keep this up. We're going to mail your diplomas to you. And they're like, yeah, we're going to keep it up. Love it, love it, love it. She deserves that kind of a reaction wherever she goes. Okay. Out of time, y'all. Out of time. Love you, and we'll see you tomorrow. Everybody, enjoy the rest of your day. Kisses. Mwah. Peace.